That was the Tubes from 1983. She's a Beauty. Family of God before that from 1999. It was Snatch. We got a bunch of skips. Seems like I've got a locked groove version of Pete Townsend's Let My Love Open the Door. Felix doing Tiger Stripes from 1984. Motmos from 1999, when they were still a trio, did the Soldering Socials. Stringalongs did Wheels from 1960. Hazel Adkins with Boo Boo the Cat. We heard Monotonics. Well, it was a long set, wasn't it? Monotonics did Never Died Before. Polar Goldie Cats with Dut Dut Che Che. And Thumbling did Butterfield 8, Moviola Convenience Store, JC Satan, I Don't Feel Like Dancing, and Fake Another One. Let's see if we can get out of this loop already. Ah! All right, let's try this. This is WFMU in East Orange, WMFU in Mount Hope, in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, online at WFMU.org. Stay tuned. Mark Hurst is next. Here comes Tectonic. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the next hour or so. It's great to have you. Thanks so much for joining. I hope you had a chance to listen to last week's Tectonic episode in which I played footage from an anti-smartphone protest. It was a lot of fun. It was held in New York City, where I'm from, and it included an interview with Logan Lane, who's a co-founder of a group called the Luddite Club, this group of young people in New York City who have forsworn toxic, addictive, big tech surveillance devices, also known as phones, iPads, and that sort of thing. So you can go back and you can listen to that episode if you like. It's available at tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm. The reason I'm talking about last week's episode is because this week's episode today is a kind of a continuation. It dovetails with that episode with the smartphone protest, because we're going to be talking about topics related to these neo-techno-Luddites. I've got a live in-studio guest today. Amanda Hannah McClear is here, and she's going to tell her story. She is a filmmaker who is making the Luddite Club documentary, a film in process right now that is telling the story of not just the group in New York City, but Luddites everywhere. It's a fascinating story. She's got some great information about the people she's talked to and what she's learned and what people are doing and what they're not doing. We're going to be talking with Amanda Hannah McClear. In fact, why delay any further? Let's say hello to Amanda. Amanda, are you with us?
Hello, hello.
Thanks so much for joining today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, so you are working on this Luddite Club documentary. Is that the actual title of the documentary?
It is. I'm really tempted to change it to Luddite Renaissance, but no, club. I think a club is way more approachable than a renaissance.
And so this Luddite Club documentary, did I get that right? You're not just focused on these young people in New York City. This is a pretty broad focused document of this movement, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Which really started with the Luddite Club in 2022 and has just grown. It's exploded since then. It's a full-on movement. And I did use the word renaissance. It's a renaissance of reclaiming the word Luddite.
And I should say that this idea of the techno-Luddites or Luddism has come up on past shows. In fact, we had live in-studio guests in the fall of 2024. I had a show with three of those members. Jameson, Sasha, and Lucy were here in studio. Again, that's also available at tectonic.fm. I've also had on the show a couple of people who you have interviewed for this documentary. Brian Merchant, who wrote the fabulous book Blood in the Machine about the history of the Luddites. And then also I interviewed a few years ago Jenny Odell, who wrote a book called How to Do Nothing. And I understand that's a very special book for you, right, Amanda?
Yes, Jenny, my love. I read that book in 2019, and it's pretty ironic because the ex-boyfriend who recommended that book to me was very online and very on his phone.
So the ex-boyfriend is on his phone and he looks up briefly and says, you should read this Jenny Odell book.
He said, like, yeah, you know, you talk about this all the time and she's saying it in this book, so just read it. Basically, like, read it, don't talk to me about it, just read the book. And I'm so glad he said that, because I read that book and I just felt, understood. And it was finally someone critiquing technology, a tech artist at that, criticizing technology in the same way that I was. So I knew I wasn't crazy and I wasn't alone.
And you're right. That was back in 2019. So pre-pandemic.
Yes.
This is before the explosion of Zoom and before the big tech companies had had achieved trillionaire status. And already at that point, you were feeling that something was wrong.
Absolutely. No, I mean, I was at parties with friends and they were scrolling on Instagram or watching Vine compilations. And I just thought to myself, is this a party? This doesn't feel like a party. I feel really alienated right now. And then I was working in television. So I spent 6 years in television and post-production. And I was behind a screen constantly. So that radicalized me. I just didn't feel good. I had to convince my coworkers to leave the office and go to Bryant Park for lunch because they just chained themselves to the desk. So I was feeling bad with all that screen time. And then I remember around 2018, I was trying to look up research on screen time, and I couldn't find it. It didn't exist. And I was like, I need something to make me feel like I'm not losing my mind here, that there's something wrong with this. And there were no studies available. And I would talk to friends, and they were like, you sound like a Luddite. And that's the first time I heard it. It was around 2018, you sound like a Luddite. And I knew that as a pejorative term. And I thought, let me look into this. And I was like, they actually sound pretty rad. I don't know what you're talking about. But that's, you know, the first and last time until I met the kids that I was really engaging with that word.
And I want to get to that point when you met the kids, but let's just focus briefly on this word Luddite.
Yes.
Or Luddism. As for anyone who hasn't read Brian Merchant's book or heard that interview, his book is called Blood in the Machine, and it tells the history of this group of protesters and activists and organizers in England in the early 1800s who wanted to protest not the fact that technology was being used in the weaving industry in Manchester or wherever. It wasn't the fact that technology was being used. It was the way in which some of the technology was being used to create exploitative conditions. And so they went in and they wrote letters to Parliament, and they tried all sorts of different ways to create change. And eventually they ended up entering some factories and breaking some of the frames. They were called frame breakers. But at least at first, they were very targeted in breaking only the technology that was exploitative and leaving aside the other technology. And that, I learned a lot from that book in that, as you said, Luddite is so often applied as a pejorative term, but the reality is, the historically accurate way to look at Luddites is that they were fighting for a more just economy, which I feel like is just what you're trying to capture in this documentary.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the thing about the Luddites, and we say this on the doc all the time, is that they were against the abuse, not the use.
Oh, that's
technology.
A good way to put it.
And it rhymes. And, you know, people remember it that way, you know, but they truly were. Like you said, they advocated peacefully. They wrote songs and poems, and they were playful. They wrote mocking letters as General Ludd. Ned Ludd was a folkloric figure. He wasn't real, but he was immensely helpful as like this figure to sign threatening letters to Parliament to or to the magistrates. And so, you know, they tried everything they possibly could. To have a healthy relationship with the factories, with the owners, but they were ignored. And there was famine going on at the time. The English government was investing in a war with France. And so they were choosing to invest in a war over their own people, and they were losing their jobs. Like, these workers were losing their jobs.
Oh, let's hold on right there. So you have unnecessary militarization.
Yeah.
Food insecurity,
uh-huh.
And job loss at a time of rapid breakneck speed of technological deployment. Oh, that's just something from the past.
That's just something from the past. That doesn't sound familiar at all today, does it? Precisely. They were also skilled artisans. These are weavers. This was passed down from generation to generation. It wasn't just a job. It was an identity. So they're contending with that as well. So it's just so unfortunate to me that when you hear the word Luddite, you have all these negative associations with it. And if you look it up on Google, it'll also give you...
I'm sorry. We don't use that word on this show.
Good. Fantastic. Okay. Yeah, right? Didn't you say you had like a drop button, like you could just drop, maybe you just
yeah,
bleep out the Google.
That. Yeah, that's a curse word on this show.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, rewind. You know,
can use your favorite non-monopolistic search engine to look up.
Or your dictionary, you know.
Yes.
Just got one of those, like an actual like dictionary
printed.
And thesaurus too, printed book. But yeah, it's really unfortunate to me that people are so have such a flawed understanding of like what a Luddite is. And that's one of the things we're trying to do with the documentary, is we're trying to rehabilitate the word Luddite.
That's great. I really resonate with your early experience. You're talking about feeling adrift and a little alone in 2018. And that's certainly how I felt. That was around the time this show started in 2017. And I remember people saying, why are you always going on about these big tech companies as though they're evil? We like Google. We like Facebook. And now some of those same people will come up to me and say, now I understand what you were saying. So you were working in TV. You're trying to get your coworkers to come out to Bryant Park. For people who don't know New York City, there's this beautiful park right behind the New York Public Library. Beautiful place to go have lunch. And you're feeling a little bit alone. And then what happens?
So then the pandemic hits. And I think this is when it sunk in for a lot of people that the use of tech, our screen time, got pretty bad. And I was clued into all of this, especially after reading Jenny's book. And so then I tried everything I could to have a positive relationship with my technology, just like the original Luddites. You know, I put screen time limits. I did black and white mode. I took the apps that I found addictive off my phone, but kept the phone. And then finally, I just realized, like, no, I'm hooked on this thing. I got rid of my social media, and I thought that would do it. I'm like, that's surely it. It's just social media. The phone is an incredible tool. I mean, look at this. This is something that used to fit into a massive room, the computer, right? It now fits in my pocket. Am I going to throw this thing away? That seems ridiculous. But then I found myself scrolling on random apps, like news apps. And I thought, what? There's nothing about this that I actually want to engage with. I'm just scrolling to scroll. And so that's when I got rid of it. It was 2021. And I was just about to start teaching because I left the film industry temporarily just because it was so bad during the pandemic. And I wanted a career change. I also wanted to give back. And so I went back to my old high school to teach. So 10 years later, teaching at my old high school, sans smartphone, sans social media.
And this is in Brooklyn, right?
It's in Brooklyn, South Brooklyn, Midwood represent.
This is Edward R. Murrow High School.
Yes.
And so what subject, what grade or grades were you teaching?
I was teaching all the grades. So I was is freshman through senior, and I was teaching graphic design and film. So my old teacher, now my boss, asked me to come back to start a film department at the school.
Oh, wow.
And it was an honor. And, I thought it could be a really good moment to touch base with kids and also talk about tech with media, you know, because people always think that like the film teacher teaching editing on Premiere or, graphic design on Photoshop would just love tech and have no critique of it or anything like that or criticism. And it was the opposite with me. I mean, the kids saw me on my dumb phone and they're like, yo, Miss McClear, why you got a burner? So they were confused. But the thing was, is like, I just started teaching for the first time, and it's 2021. It's the return to in-person learning.
That's right.
So we're all masked. We are masked. The kids are traumatized. They've gone through some serious harm from remote schooling. They whispered. They didn't know how to talk to each other. They didn't know how to talk in group settings. And I couldn't see, 2/3 of their face. So a really weird time. Really, really weird time to start teaching. And with my particular worldview, strange time to just be in that school.
And so there's this constant conversation going on in the media these days about, do smartphones actually affect young people? And do they actually affect young people's brains? And it happens somehow that the boosters of technology are always trotting out data that says, oh, no, it doesn't affect them at all. They adapt. They're, and then everyone who's outside of the tech industry says, look at this data, look at this research, and they have vast trove of anecdotes. So in your experience, how do you answer that question of how smartphones change young people?
Listen, and it's not just young people, it's all of us. It's all of us. And it's really easy to go, oh, look, the young people, aren't they? We love to hate on young people, don't we? Like, it's all their fault. They don't know how to do anything. They don't know how to actually socialize. And it's all of us. We've all suffered from our behavioral addiction to technology, to smartphones. And the one thing that I saw, I just say, like, yeah, okay, the data, whatever. What do you see on the ground? What do you see in person? And as a New York City public school teacher, with 120 students at a time, I could see it. I had my own little study that I could do.
Right.
So I asked my students, I said, what's your screen time? And sometimes I would just like put my lesson plan to the side and just talk to them about tech. It's like, what's your screen time? And, you know, they'd be really embarrassed. And they would say, 6, 7, 8, 9. And I know your face is shocked right now, but one student said 20. She said, 20 hours is my average. And I said, girl, when do you sleep? And she said, I don't. I take naps because her insomnia is so bad. And so they're not sleeping. They are not sleeping. And I mean, a 16-year-old saying that to you, that's like key development time for that brain. You know, you need that time to sleep. And they're just not taking it.
All right. So in the aftermath of pandemic lockdown, you're in this high school. You're teaching graphic design and filmmaking. Everybody's masked. The kids are traumatized. You're seeing the effects of too much screen time and the continuing addictive properties of these devices and these platforms. So the stage is set. How does that turn into the Luddite Club forming and this, the beginnings of this documentary?
Yeah, absolutely. So the one thing I should mention right before I answer that question, or the one thing I should say, is that, you know, I'm going back to high school. It's 10 years later. And I'm like, am I 16 or am I 28? I don't know what age I am. How much has changed? How much hasn't? What should change, honestly? And it's really weird and trippy. It's this fever dream. Adding to the fact that it's a pandemic and there are zombies, literal zombies roaming the halls because they're on their phones all the time. So, you know, that's what's happening. And then I look up in the hall and it says, join the Luddite Club. Don't be a phony, be a Luddite. And phony is spelled like phone. Yeah. And I go, oh my God, if this is what I think it is, I'm so excited. But I'm a new teacher. I'm really overwhelmed. I'm building my curriculum like in between classes. So it just starts to build. And I start hearing little things. This is, 2021. And then fast forward, and a student gets transferred into my class, V. And she's brilliant. And we get along really well. And she comes back from the summer the next year and goes, Miss McClear, you have to look at this footage that I'm shooting on my camcorder with this club. And I was like, you know, that sounds awesome. I'll get to it. And she had to harass me. And I felt terrible because, you know, it's a teacher. You're just so overwhelmed. So she comes to me. She's like, you just look at it now. She caught me at a break and I'm looking and it's the club's initial footage. They let V in to film, even though, of course, you know, there's this question of technology. What spaces should it be in? But V's in there filming on her camcorder. And I said, this is brilliant. You have to keep going. Keep going. And then it's not too long after that she runs into my room and says, I'm in the New York Times. And I said, no way. And she said, yeah, the whole club, like the club is in the New York Times. So, you know, fast forward and all these media outlets after the article is posted start reaching out. We want to do a doc. But they start looking at these, they're looking at these kids like they're curiosities. Like, look at these teenagers off their phones. They didn't regard them as principled young people in the way that I knew that they were. So I went and asked V, and I said, V, I feel, you know, a little weird about asking you. I know I'm in a position of power as your teacher, so please don't feel pressured. But I really want to tell the story, and I want to tell it with you. And that's how it began. She convinced the club to let me in.
Wow. And so how was it the first time you showed up? Was it hard to... Did you show up? I keep thinking of that meme that is well known these days of Steve Buscemi.
Yes, that's me. That was me.
Greetings, young people.
It doesn't help that I also skateboard still. So yeah, I fully, you know, he's holding a skateboard in that meme. So I felt like that. And I was like, God, you cannot do that. You cannot seem like you're just trying to hang, bro. Because like, people did stuff like that to them. And, you know, they're really good sniffing that out.
Of course.
Right? So I was like, I'm just going to show up. I'm not going to impose myself. And, you know, I was a broke teacher. Teachers do not make enough. Pay your teachers more. And so I had just a camera, no microphone, no equipment, no nothing. And I just start recording. And some guy comes up to them who's been off the internet for 12 years. And he said, oh man, I'm so glad I found you guys. I didn't even see the article because I don't go online, but like someone told me about it and I've been off the internet for 12 years and I'm so happy to find my people.
Wait, so was this outside in a public space somewhere?
Yeah, so the club would meet, you know, they had their club meetings at school, but every week they had Sundays. Sundays in front of the Grand Army Plaza Central Library.
Brooklyn Public Library. The front steps kind of thing.
Front steps. Everyone hang out. Of course, Luddites were notoriously late. And so people would wait for a little while. And then, you know, they would migrate to the park and they had this spot in the park. And so this guy just happened upon the club. And that was my first time filming with them because I also wanted to make sure I was in a public place. I wanted to reach out to parents and make sure that was okay, that what I was doing was okay. And it was incredible. I knew right away, like the sun just hit right and the stories the kids were telling were just so beautiful that I was like, this is something really important.
And what were some of the things that they were saying at that first meeting?
They had been meeting.
My first
meeting with the Luddite Club. Yeah, you know, they were talking. Logan was talking about how she had lost all her friends, and I had the same experience. You know, I knew getting off social media, I would lose some friends. I figured it would be the people that just sent like heart emojis to my stories. I was like, they're not really invested. You know, it's this passive kind of friendship. But then I was shocked by all of the friends that I lost. I lost a lot of friends that couldn't just passively engage with me anymore. So I felt very alienated and alone. And to hear a young person like Logan say it, I was like, she gets it. She gets it. And then, you know, Matt Lilly, he was the guy who was visiting. We're all buds now. Matt said, yeah, but, you know, you found the real ones. And then Logan looked around and she was like, yeah, I found the real ones. So, like, one of the things I talk all the time with my executive producer Renee about is just that, you know, the documentary is trying to show that it's not only possible to live off of these devices and live without these devices, but it's not only possible, but it's preferable. The connections you make in person are incredible. And the people that you meet, the new friends that you make, they're just, it feels so much closer to, I don't know, what I think friendship should really feel like.
So it is likely, if I'm hearing you right, Amanda, it is likely if someone decides to go for it, put away their social media accounts, maybe even get rid of their surveillance phone, it is possible that they could lose touch with some of their acquaintances. I hesitate to call them friends, because if they're really your friends...
You won't lose them.
You won't lose them.
Yeah.
But you're saying in exchange for that, they're going to... You're saying, trust me, you're going to gain much more significant and meaningful relationships. Is that fair?
Absolutely. That's how I felt. But the thing is, too, I'd want people to know if they're curious about this, it takes time. There's a lot of alienation you're going to feel until you find your tribe, until you find people that are willing to talk to you for an extended period of time without looking at their phone or posting it to social media. That could almost convince you to turn right back around. I had that moment. I had that moment in 2017, 2018, where I, you know, paused all my social accounts and I felt lonely. And I had this very, very strong memory of being on the train. You know, I was commuting to Midtown for work and I didn't have social media. So I put my phone in my pocket and I looked up and everyone was looking down. And I thought, what's the point of looking up if everyone's looking down?
Exactly.
So I'm just going to go back on these things because I feel like I'm missing something. So this is a journey that has taken like place over the course of several years. This is not just like, I just woke up when I met the kids. It's a really long journey and it can feel lonely, but the rewards on the other side are truly worth it.
Maybe we can play an excerpt. I want to start by playing a couple minutes of this Lamp Club rally.
Yeah.
Because this is in an outdoor space, and there is, listeners will hear, there is an activity taking place of cleaning up people's phones for them. Do you want to set this up? Where was this held, and what's the context here?
Yeah, of course. So this is Tompkins Square Park back in April of this year.
That's in the East Village, for people who don't know Manhattan. Uh-huh.
Yes, thank you. Sorry, I'm like so... Native New Yorker code sometimes, and yeah. So at Tompkins Square Park, and Jameson actually introduced me to Lamp Club and the larger Luddite Renaissance that's happening here, all the clubs affiliated with that. And, you know, Jameson just said, hey, there's a bunch of gnomes and they're, you know, critical of technology and they do public theater. So, like, maybe you want to go.
And anybody who heard last week's episode with the smartphone protests will know about the gnome caps. But if you haven't heard that, go back and listen to last week's episode. But they do mention gnome caps. Let's listen to the Lamp Club rally here on Tectonic.
We have so many gnome hats. If any of them want them, they can have them. Okay, shake hands with someone. Nice to meet you. Okay, we are in public with gnome hats.
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 And we have things to say about the phone today.
Of course.
We have things to say about the phone today.
Today.
Today is a public forum.
Amen.
All right? All right, everybody, think the gnome be the gnome. Think the gnome be the gnome.
Think the gnome be the gnome.
Think the gnome be the gnome.
I'm doing hats. I'm setting up.
You guys look really silly right now, but like in a good way.
Are you on your phone today?
My friend, would anyone like to get their phone fixed? Oh, I get you to delete an app. What's your name?
Leslie.
I'm Jackie. Nice to meet you. Do you have any apps that are impeding on your life?
Should I be honest?
Yes. I see a TikTok right there. I see a Pinterest. I see a YouTube.
Okay.
I see a Netflix. I see a Reddit.
I would say probably.
Let's do TikTok. Hold my hand. You know you can. We're just gonna do this for you, just for today. You promise me that? Just for today. Okay, let's go later. Alrighty, now lay her down flat.
Yep.
Oh, she's been fixed! Alright, you can take the seat now. Okay, let's delete Starbucks and Prime Video, just to cleanse her, you know? Get rid of the bad demons in there.
Let me think for a second about what else I have to say. Oh, I just want to appreciate the Luddite Club for being here.
My name is Jameson, and I have not had an iPhone for almost 5 years now. I have a flip phone, and it's possible. And I guess I wanted to share that, you know? If you want to get rid of your phone, you can.
And that was the Lamp Club rally that is part of the Luddite Club documentary that is being put together by my live in-studio guest today, Amanda Hannah McClear. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic. And as I just said, we've got a great live interview today talking about the making of this Luddite Club documentary that's still ongoing, with the filmmaker herself, Amanda Hannah McClear. I also want to say that WFMU is having our October Hellraiser fundraiser that's going on right now, and the station could really use your support. We're trying to raise $360,000. We're getting close to the goal. We're doing great, but let me explain why this Hellraiser is so important to the station. Because the station lost an important community service grant in recent months. It was worth $200,000 a year. The station was getting it every year like clockwork for 20 years, and now it is completely gone. So we're trying to fill this hole in our budget. It represents 8% of the annual budget of the station. And so the Hellraiser is extra important in these these challenging times that we and other independent radio stations are going through right now. So if you'd like to show your support, please go to WFMU.org and pledge. And if you are pledging during the live broadcast, you can credit Tectonic. And you can leave me a message if you want. I'm going to read those messages. But really, whatever show you credit, what's important is that your pledge go to support this amazing radio station and community that I'm so privileged to be a part of. If you really want to help the station, the best way to help is to join our Swag for Life program. That has really kept the station alive in recent years through some very challenging financial times. Swag for Life is a program where our pledgers, our donors, are giving a monthly donation of $10 or more per month. And true to the name of the program, you get all kinds of swag, which you'll see on the pledge site. So if you really want to help, if you're asking what's the best thing I could do for WFMU, join Swag for Life. When you get to the pledge widget, just say I'm giving $10 a month. That is really the best way to show your support. And thanks. Thanks to everybody who is already a Swag for Life member and those of you who have pledged, donated to the station and left me such kind notes so far this month. Thank you for that. And please, everybody, keep up the generous pledging. I want to say it's such a pleasure to have you on the show, Amanda Hannah McClear. We were just talking about this transition that you made from filmmaker to teacher, from the TV industry to teacher and then to filmmaker of the Luddite Club. And we just heard part of the documentary that's in process, this clip of the Lamp Club rally. Do you want to say anything else now that we've heard it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when I met the Luddite Club, and we started the documentary, I had these visions of how the film could go, and maybe we could, you know, it could be a documentary, but not just your typical doc. Maybe there was some, like, Luddite recreation that we could do of telling, like, the original history. But the Luddite Club's, like, you know, super bookish and shy. And I thought, man, it'd be so nice if I had some performers to collaborate with the doc. And now I show up to this rally that we cannot name, of course, right?
This is the rally that I featured last week, and it has a name that the FCC will not allow us to say.
It's a good one, though.
Ooh, the organizers could really come up with FCC-compliant names. I'd really appreciate it, but it's something like Fecal Phone.
Yeah, Fecal Phone. Yeah, so I was at Fecal Phone, and I thought, oh, my God, this is it. These are the performers I was looking for. And, you know, Lamp Club was present. A couple of other groups were present that are, you know, that make up this Luddite Renaissance. And it was just so powerful to watch this live theater happening and happening in such a playful way. I mean, Jackie is there fixing your phone, quote unquote, with a rubber chicken. Once she fixes it, she hits it with a rubber chicken and says, it's been fixed from you deleting an app.
But right. So that's the fixing.
That's the fixing, deleting an app. Right.
Right. And the clip, once people see the documentary, they'll see it on video. There's, you know, you can see in the person's face, they're thinking, am I really being asked to delete TikTok right now?
Yeah, she's horrified. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, it's been so lovely to fold in Lamp Club and other groups into the documentary because it shows that the Luddite Club is big and it's growing. It's not just Luddite Club as we know it in New York, but now it's also all of the chapters that have sprouted up all across the country and the globe. The kids inspired this whole movement. And, you know, there are people in LAMP and other groups that have cited that original article from the Times as, like, that's when I knew there were other people out there like me. So you see that in the documentary. You see just how big the club is.
So I'm hearing from you, if someone is out there saying, oh, I really resonate with this, you know, I feel like these are toxic devices, it's dimming my social relations, I feel like there's something wrong here, you're not alone. You're not alone, because that was your first step, to realize you're not alone and that it's worth going the distance. And by the way, you said during the break right now, if someone it doesn't have a Luddite Club to join, what can they do?
You can start one on your own.
Start your own Luddite Club.
You can go to LudditeClub.org and you know, I was going to say the kids, but I say kids in the best way. But, you know, Logan and Jameson, what they started and what's been continued by people like Lucy and Sasha, they, you know, this website, you can go on and it'll give you tips on how to start your club. You can get in touch. You can send an email and Lucy will email you back. And she's a freshman at Binghamton now, and she's working her butt off trying to make sure that this is a thing that continues.
Now, I should say that in this documentary, the research and the interviews you're doing for the documentary, it's not just the Luddite Club that started in Brooklyn and has now sprouted up chapters everywhere. You're going beyond, as we said before, you interview Jenny Odell and Brian Merchant. Tell me about some of the other writers, thinkers, activists outside of this core of Luddite Club members who you have talked to.
Absolutely, yeah. We've collected such an amazing group of people. So we also have Gavin Mueller, who is a professor and academic out in Amsterdam. He wrote Breaking Things at Work, Why the Luddites Were Right About Why You Hate Your Job. Excellent read.
We've got some listeners in Amsterdam.
Oh, hey-ho, Amsterdam. I love your city. I love the Kabouters. Shout out to the Kabouters, who also influenced the Luddite Renaissance. A lot of our tactics are taken from Kabouters. So, you know, Gavin is in there. We also have people like Julie Skelfo, who runs MAMA, Mothers Against Media Addiction. I got to give MAMA a shout out because they're incredible. They're a big part of the reason why phones are banned in New York City schools right now. 2 years ago, well, not 2 years ago now, longer than that, but 2021, when I started teaching, I went to my boss, who was, again, my old teacher, and I said, you know, the phones are bad. I have to say it 20 times a class. Like, what can I do? Can I just take them? Can I take them and give them back later? And she said, no, Amanda, that's a liability. And she's like, if you, God forbid something happens to it, then, you know, you're responsible. And I said, what's the greater liability? Me being responsible for their iPhone or their education? And she said, oh, dude, you got to give it up. You got to give it up. We can't do anything about the phones. And now it's 2025 and phones are banned in New York City schools. And that's largely due to the work that MAMA was doing. So I really want to give people their flowers in this and just show how big this movement is and how multifaceted it is and how many people it takes to create change.
So does it feel like, in addition to the Luddite Club spreading, that there are other groups also like MAMA and others spreading around similar concerns?
Oh, yeah. Amsterdam has the Offline Club. We've got Luddite Club here, Lamp Club. I've also collaborated with groups like Design It For Us. That's a group of college students that are directly advocating for legislation. They lobby. They go to Congress and lobby. Then you've got the HEAT Initiative. We joined in with a protest in front of the Apple Store just a few weeks ago when the latest model was launched. Crazy enough, Tim Cook was actually there. So I have that footage in the documentary as well.
Really? Wait, hold it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you mean he doesn't spend all of his time at the White House?
Yeah, I guess not. He has other places to be too.
Because
yeah.
I thought he's constantly at the White House bringing trinkets and little made up awards
for
the current occupant.
Oh, of course. Yeah, him along with, Zuckerberg and Alex Karp at Palantir. They're all hanging at the White House, right?
Yeah, that's the hangout right now for the tech bros. Well, they made it pretty clear at the inauguration where their loyalties lay, and it was not with the rest of us,
no.
Tell you that.
Yeah, the fact that they're lined up all behind him, and that's also in the documentary. We play with archival footage quite a bit.
So Tim Cook is at, and so
yeah.
You're there. There's a protest going on.
Yeah.
Apple is trying to make a big deal and get free advertising for their latest surveillance phone, degrading object. I'm not going to call it an upgrade. And so did you see him? Was he looking out, peering out of the window?
No, he was out there in the real. So this was organized by the HEAT Initiative, and they do incredible work. And I was there with several other like Luddite groups because, again, broad coalition, big tent movement. So we work with whoever is critical of technology and the abuse of technology, not the use, as I said earlier. And so we start marching, and we've got this beautiful chorus with us, and they're singing. And then we have parents with us who you know, have lost children to social media, have been prompted by AI to do terrible things. Like, these are parents who are on the front lines and have lost those most dear to them. So they're working with the HEAT initiative as well, and they're carrying portraits of their children. And then you've got, you know, representatives from the larger Luddite movement, being in pots and pans, being playful. And we all roll up to the main Apple store in Midtown Manhattan. And it's chaos. You see those long queues, you know, and everyone's so excited. And then they're very confused why people are protesting.
Right.
And then I'm looking and I'm filming somebody, and somebody has a tattoo, an Apple logo tattoo on their hand while they're scrolling. I swear I didn't make it up or like CGI it or whatever. I did not impose that. It's someone has the logo on their hand that they're scrolling on the iPhone with. Insane, like insane worship of this product device person, right? So as I'm filming that, I rack focus and it's Tim Cook, and none of us knew he was going to be there. And he's just standing outside the Apple store greeting people getting the new phone.
You don't mean that Tim Cook had the tattoo?
No, no, Tim Cook did not have the tattoo. Oh, okay. Maybe he does in places we can't see, but I don't know. This guy had it on his hand.
Wow. So Tim Cook was right there greeting people.
He saw us too.
And did he have any expression on his face or...
He clocked us. He clocked the protest, but he didn't give it much more than that. He was busy engaging with the people that were really excited.
Well, he's distracted. He had to finish glad handing and then get on his private jet to go back to the White House.
Yeah, he didn't have time for us, really, but he clocked us, so that feels good.
Now, you are doing some fundraising of your own for this documentary.
Yeah, of course. So this is our second bout of fundraising. Our first bout, you know, covered 2 years of work. And now we're looking for funds to finish. We're partnered with a 501c3. So all donations are tax deductible. And it's an exciting time. We're nearly done. We just have to get to the finish line.
And I've put a link to that fundraiser on the playlist at tectonic.fm. We spoke earlier about Jameson, who was on the show live about a year ago. You have a clip from the documentary that features Jameson reading something. Can you set this up for us?
I'd love to set this up. Okay, so this was from a gathering of Luddites from across the country. The ages were 17 to 70. I'll repeat that again, 17 to 70. This is an intergenerational movement, and we had morning readings, and so we read alongside the Reversing Falls. And the Reversing Falls is this place where currents are charging at one another and the tide is literally changing in front of you and swirling. And Jameson had this incredible reading by David Foster Wallace.
Let's take a listen to it.
The next literary rebels might well emerge as some weird bunch of anti-rebels.
Even if he gives us rabies,
we will free the iPad babies!
Who dare somehow to back away from the ironic watching. These anti-rebels would be outdated, of course. Maybe that's why they'll be the next real rebels.
So you guys are both Luddites. No phones?
Flip phones.
Real rebels, as far as I can see, risk disapproval.
Why do you think Meta, OpenAI, and Palantir have executives in the army?
Today's risks are different. The new rebels might be artists willing to risk the yawn, the gasp, and the squeal. Yeah! Accusations of socialism, anarchism, nihilism, by a world of lurkers and starers. The postmodern insurgents risk outrage.
Based results not for.
But maybe that'll be the point.
Apple.
Who knows?
And that was Jameson reading a passage from David Foster Wallace. That's going to be part of the Luddite Club documentary, filmed, directed by Amanda Hannah McClear. Do you know what David Foster Wallace piece that was from?
It was E. Pluribus Unum.
Okay.
By David Foster Wallace.
One of his many essays.
Yes, yes. And one thing that I should mention about that clip, you know, I know that listeners are only getting the audio, is that it's a really playful documentary and it's mixed media. And that aesthetic is really important because, you know, when we're dealing with AI and we're dealing with things like Sora, which are trying to create images that look real and authentic, but of course don't read that way, I thought it was really important to have this kind of rough-hewn, zine-like feeling and surface for the film. So we play with animation and live action. It's supposed to feel like a sketchbook, you know, that's malleable, changeable, so that the audience realizes that they have a sense of agency that they have to change the course of, you know, this tech march, right? This inevitable tech march that we all think is just, you know, that there's no end to.
Right. Well, that's a theme that keeps coming up in your comments, which is that you have agency. You have a choice to do something different. Mm-hmm. And while it may look scary and it may be uncomfortable temporarily at first, the gains are so worth it. And here you have thrown yourself professionally into the deep end for years now to make this documentary. And as you say, you're trying to finish this up at a time when big tech is just flooding the zone, as someone said, flooding the zone with excrement, let's say, this AI slop in the form of OpenAI Sora, and all the big tech companies are trying to get in on this sludge party. Mm-hmm. Here you're making something by hand, and it's showing, it has the zine aesthetic, and it's showing that you can still be creative in this era. But doesn't it feel like you're swimming against the current?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like the reversing falls that I was mentioning. It's these two currents fighting, right? Fighting and surging at one another. But I think we'll win out. You know, of course, artists have this question of whether or not our creations will be valuable with things like OpenAI, Sora. But, you know, we're not going to lose the need and the want and the desire to create. It's just going to keep happening. And that's the thing with the documentary. The importance for me is to blend digital and analog as best as I can. So, you know, obviously I'm editing on Premiere with video, with the souped up camera and everything. But to bring that hand-drawn look, our animator takes photos, prints them out, alters them with his own hand and scans it back in. That's really important for me.
We just have a few minutes left. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic, and we're talking with Amanda Hannah McClear, who's making a documentary on the Luddites, not just the Luddite Club here in New York City, but the renaissance, as she says, generally, of techno-Luddites and related groups, all trying to resist the toxic, exploitative big tech hegemony that I've been railing against since 2017 on this show. You, Amanda, went to yet another protest yesterday. We just have a few minutes left, but I thought you could say something about this. Now, I've talked about the Friend, this surveillance device that is being advertised in the New York City subway. You're supposed to wear this thing as a pendant around your neck, and then it surveils the audio of you and everyone within earshot, and then it texts you little stupid things, its own AI responses to what you and others are saying, if I'm getting this right. Anyway, you went to a protest against the Friend, is that right, or rally?
Yeah, rally. We do like calling them rallies or parades because they're really playful.
Yeah.
And the whole thing with this one was that we were joking that it was Friends of Friends.com. And so it was advertised as like, hey, yeah, come. Like, we need to stick up for our Friend. Come support Friend, because it's been getting a lot of hate in New York City. And so some of the flyers that we put out said, like, yo, I heard you New Yorkers got beef. Come say it to my face. And we said, Father Demo Square, 5 o'clock.
And for anyone not in New York, that is in the West Village of Manhattan.
Another park. Public space. That's where it's at. Public space.
Yep. And I know it well.
Yeah. So, you know, you could walk up, and you get to see the AI pendant in person and ask it questions. So, you know, we had one of our buddies up there in a pendant, and people would come up and say things like, hey, I'm fighting with my boyfriend, what should I do? And the AI pendant might say something like, I don't know, just kill him. Because of the nature of these AI devices, right? They don't give good advice. And I mean, that one's a little, like, dark, but we...
Well, it's dark because, I mean, kidding aside,
yeah.
As you alluded to earlier, these AIs have recommended murder and suicide to users.
They absolutely have. And we said a little bit of that. We also had some like playful responses. We also had them spout out facts about data centers and the ecological ramifications of data centers. But it was a very playful environment. And once Friend had had enough, well, actually, once we had enough of Friend, everyone rushed him and graffitied his body, his pendant cardboard body. We ran him into West 4th Street.
And we should just say the individual who was dressed up as Friend knew this was part of the agenda.
Knew it, was okay. Not harmed by it, encouraged people to graffiti him. But we chased him into the West 4th station, where all these ads have been and where they've gotten a lot of attention.
That's a subway station.
Yes. Friend had to swipe through with their debit card to get through the turnstile. And, this is all happening. And I turn and look over, and Avi Shiffman is there, who created Friend.
So the founder of Friend is there at the rally.
Yeah. He took a red eye just to see it. He was not involved in our planning whatsoever. I don't want anyone to think that this was a publicity stunt on his front, because he didn't know about it until like a few hours before. So, we're there. And one of our organizers got to tell him how they felt right there in person. And then we graffitied some more of the posters. A big group of people came from all over. These were people that were in clubs in the Luddite Renaissance, but also not. And Avi went on record saying that he designed those posters to be graffitied. I don't buy that. But so we weren't doing anything wrong, of course. We chased him back up. And there's a...
Chase the Friend, not Avi.
Oh, not Avi. Yes, thank you. Yeah. Chased the Friend back up, where he started to sputter out and die, unfortunately, in front of this very famous basketball court.
Yeah.
And there is a man there who is called the Messiah. And he challenged the AI pendant to a 1v1. And so it was man versus machine, quite literally, at this very famous basketball court off West 4th Street in front of IFC.
1v1 basketball.
1v1 basketball.
It wasn't like a cage match.
No cage match. It wasn't a cage, technically, because New York City parks, they kind of look like they're in cages.
Right.
But he took him on, and he beat AI. So that left me hopeful.
Oh, that's a relief. I'm guessing that they decided on the outcome a little bit like certain wrestling matches, right? That they decided beforehand, or no?
Listen, we had no idea the Messiah thing like was so not planned.
Oh, really?
It was not planned at all.
I didn't know.
He was out on the street, and we started joking that someone had to eulogize Friend.
Oh, I didn't realize this.
Yeah, no, not planned.
Oh, so this is
someone live
from
theater.
The neighborhood whose nickname in the neighborhood is Messiah.
Messiah. Yes, yes,
oh,
yes.
I didn't
Thank
know
you for
that.
Clarifying. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I thought you had gotten another participant.
No.
To...
Oh, no. No.
Oh.
Yeah. No, he's a guy that's well known on West 4th Street at this basketball court.
Yeah.
And all of his crew was just like 1v1, 1v1.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was pretty great. Again, this is like what happens when you have live theater and you're not planning for all the we did not know Avi was going to be there.
Right.
No clue that the Messiah, who was very well known in the neighborhood,
you know,
was going to be there.
Just hear me out here, Amanda, but it's almost it's almost as though when you do things in real life with social interaction, interesting connections can occur that create wonderful and meaningful experiences that leave people better off than if they had sat there looking at a stupid big tech device the entire time.
Who would have thunk it? Also, too, like, we're trying to create FOMO for the people online. Like, you couldn't have seen it.
You should have been there.
You should have been there.
Okay. I'm going to put links to the Luddite Club and your stuff on the playlist. Again, it's at tectonic.fm, tonic.fm. Amanda Hannah McClear, thank you so much for joining me on the show, and best of luck finishing that documentary.
Thank you so much, and good luck to everybody trying to extricate themselves from their technology.
And speaking of that, friends, I have some homework for you for next time. You know what to do. I want you to avoid Apple, abandon Amazon, forget Facebook, and whatever you do, get off Google. You're listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Let's go out to the song Computer by The Microbes. Thanks to Daniel Blumen for making that suggestion. I'll see you next time, friends.
What is that crazy stuff? And we're off. And welcome to another installment of this show, which is called It's Complicated, an hour of Prague and Prague-adjacent music. I'm your host, Dave Mandel. I'm here every week right exactly at this time, 7 p.m. Monday evening. I thank you for joining me, and you won't regret it. Lots of good music, as usual tonight, from all over the place in space and time. And we're going to start tonight's show with a Swedish group called Kultivator, I'm sort of approximating Swedish pronunciation. From the 70s, we're going to hear a track from a 1978 album from that group. And we're going to hear a track called Smafolket, which I'm probably mispronouncing, for what good that does. And we'll be back after this. We'll be right back. Yikes, I cut that off a second too soon. My apologies to everybody, especially the band Cultivator. Well, just a second or two. And again, we heard a track from 1978, from a 1978 album called... Do I need to approximate the title? Barndommens Stigar, which is, you know, as usual, a vague approximation. And again, they're from Sweden. We are going to go to Germany now, Hamburg specifically, and I'm going to play something from a group called Tomorrow's Gift. And I'm going to play a track from a self-titled album released in 1970, and not to get all pedantic, you know, too early in the show here, but 1970 is sort of, we're in like pre-Prague or proto-Prague territory. So like a lot of bands around that time who I play on the show, they were, you know, they were kind of like transitioning from like a heavy blues rock band to more proggy material. And I think this track kind of straddles the two. It is pretty proggy for that early date, 1970. So again, this is the group Tomorrow's Gift, from a German group, from a self-titled album, 1970. This will be a track called, what, you ask? What track was I going to play? Riddle in the Swamp is, in fact, the track I have queued up here. So this is the band Tomorrow's Gift.